Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Metaphysical Hour. I'm Julia Cannon, and tonight is, well, actually, we're recording the show, and this will be airing on Friday, the 19th, May 19th. Oh, my goodness, everything is going so quickly. Time, which there is no such thing. Okay, let's just leave it there. There is no such thing, but it is rushing. Well, it's everything. It's just so, I guess it's just because of the world that we're living in and the lives that we're living right now. My guest tonight, I'm so excited about. She's one of our speakers. She's one of our keynote speakers for the conference, our transformation conference, coming up June 9th through the 11th. And what's so funny about this, and I guess that's probably why they said, she completely understands where I'm coming from and why my words are going to get all jumbled here because this energy is coming in. They give us our words. We had the hardest time getting together for this show. And part of it is because of our schedules. We're all running in different directions. And it's so funny because to get this show together, I was contacting her. Because I was in Taiwan, and she's like, "What the heck are you doing over there?" And then we're trying to get together, and then she's like, "Well, wait a minute, I'm trying to set the schedule and trying to say, okay, well, when can we get together?" And she's like, "Well, I'm leaving for LAX, and I'm gonna be here, and I'm gonna, and it's like, well, can we do the show here?" And I'm like, "No, I'm gonna be teaching class," and it's like, "Well, so we're just trying to," it's like, "Well, this is what we do, these are the lives that we lead, and." This is what you do when you're in this kind of work and you're into spreading light. and that's just how it is. I love this woman. And one of the reasons, how I know Trisha, this is Trisha McCannon, and how I know Trisha is, she was on the speaking circuit for many, many years, with Mom, and that's how I got to know you, really, Trisha, is, you were always on the same circuit with Mom. You were always there and stuff, and it was just really funny. You were just always around, and you were always so delightful, and you were just always cheerful and this wonderful energy. And I didn't know a whole lot about you. I just knew you were a wonderful energy. And this is why, we had you at the conference. Oh, let's see. I think it was about, I'm trying to remember what year it was. But you were on, it was the same time we had Danyon Brinkley the same year. But I'm like, this is the first time I'm really like, I was thinking about it and I was like, you're clairvoyant and you do these, you have these abilities and everything, but I don't know how you got into all this stuff. I don't know your story. I don't know that part of you. And that's the part that I am always so thrilled about, and I'm always really, really interested about. And so that's what I'm so excited about tonight. So everybody, I want to bring on this beautiful, beautiful woman, Trisha McCannon, who is on has your classified on your page or things, clairvoyant, historian, author, and teacher. So welcome. Trisha.
Oh, Julia, thank you so much for having me on. And, it is true. It does seem like we're running hither, thither, and yon, and probably a lot of our listeners are the same way. Mm-hmm. You were in, the other side of the world teaching just last week when we tried to do the show. And I just can't even imagine that you're like functioning, because then, yeah, that flips your body clock. So bravo, and thank you so much for having me.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you for being here. And this is what we have to do sometimes. We just had to create our own time element. We can't do it on the scheduled times. We'll just make our own time.
That's
so
good.
Here we go.
Yeah, well, you know, you're absolutely right about your mom and me. And I have been on the speaking circuit for, gosh, probably 20 years. I've been speaking all over the world, and in America, many times it's LA or San Francisco or San Diego or San Jose and New York and Austin, Texas. I live in Atlanta, Georgia, so I've certainly spoken in Florida and conferences, you know, in Ohio and in the Midwest, and, you know, it's really my pleasure. But I also spoken for many years in Europe. I probably have taken groups to Italy 17 times, taken groups to the pyramids of Egypt and to the sacred sites of Peru and Mount Shasta. I've taken groups there for several years for the underground cities there and the inner earth people, and down in Mexico, I was actually one of the keynote speakers for the December 21st, 2012 event, which was quite an honor and quite powerful to see all those wonderful shamans doing their ceremonies. And so for years, I went to Poland to speak. I've probably spoken in England 30 or 40 times. I've been over there. So I tend to travel and teach and speak all over the world, but as you know, like your mom, I write books, and these books are like baby elephants being born, and they take quite a lot of work. You know, I was saying to you a little earlier, I wish I could write one of those simple, like 100, you know, 200-page books, but as you know, I have 3 books out in print. I have a 4th book coming out in October of 2017, and probably the very first book I wrote only had 30 footnotes, but, you know, that was probably the easy one, and that one is probably right under 300 pages. But my second book was about the lost years of Jesus and how he was connected with the great spiritual mystery schools that were scattered all over the world, in England and Persia and in the Far East, and of course Egypt, the motherland, and in the Essene traditions, which was the esoteric Kabbalistic wisdom of the Jews and the Hebrews. And that book had 1,200 footnotes and 100 pages of back matter, if you could imagine.
And that was the light one.
Actually, I think of that one as the hot fudge Sunday brownie. People have read it. People get it. They highlight it in 5 different colors because it's so rich with information. It has over 100 illustrations. And, you know, I was in the cave writing that book for 3 years. I practically did not even come out and speak. And I had been on the road speaking for 6 months of the year for years. And, I mean, I think maybe twice a year during the 3 years. But it was very initiatory because the masters, Jesus in particular, was in my house day and night. And so I was really under an enormous download. Although, you know, as you know, if you've looked at my books, you know, my dad was a lawyer. And I was raised in very traditional Christian setting here. My dad was Baptist, my mom was Methodist, we were raised Episcopalian, and my older sister is married to a preacher, a fundamentalist preacher. So if you could imagine, you know, here I am from an early age clairvoyant and seeing elementals in the forest and, you know, seeing past lives for people and getting information about their future and things that were just not on the Baptist, you know, board. And so, you know, I never in a million years thought I would write a book on Jesus. Actually, I was writing a book on the great spiritual mysteries because, as you know, I, you know, was asking a lot of questions growing up, like a lot of us, about some of the things that don't make sense the way they're presented in traditional religion, and I really wanted these deeper answers, and so I wanted to have them. So I did a lot of praying growing up that someone wiser than myself would show up that it could explain to me how, you know, one night in my dreams, I would be in the, you know, at the temples of golden wisdom, learning with masters at night. The next night, I'd be in the bowels of the lower astral plane. The next night, I'd be on board a spaceship talking with ETs. And it was like, okay, I know I'm active on the inner planes, but how does this gift work? You know, where's the gas pedal and where's the brake? And, you know, what's the roadmap anyway? I mean, how do you get from one place to another?
It just, I love like, it.
Random. So I when I was 19 years old, I was in school at Florida State University, where I graduated, and this group of masters appeared to me called the Viragi Masters. And they said, we've watched you for a long time. We put you through a whole series of tests, and because you always chose the path of love and forgiveness, we have decided to teach you. And so they had a roadmap to the multidimensional universe. And that was incredibly helpful. And they also had this technique that they called soul travel, which is the ability really that any of us have to shift our consciousness, our soul consciousness, while we're still living in the physical body, and to begin to travel into these higher realms so that we don't have to take somebody's word for it and wait till we die to find out. We can actually go into these realms and have experiences while we're still alive, meet masters, meet sages, begin to learn and accelerate our spiritual path. And there's not a dogma associated with this. You know, there's not a going to hell or anything like that. It's they call it the science of soul travel. And this was my kind of path. It was like, you know, I don't have to believe it. I can find out for myself.
Absolutely.
So yeah. That was very pivotal. And you know, so when I graduated from college, I came back to Atlanta, and I, you know, was a commercial advertising photographer, and I actually opened my first studio. I was the first commercial female photographer in the city, and I was on the fast track with my photography for many years. So in the outside world, I was shooting for Coke and IBM and Macy's, and I even shot for Ralph Lauren and Calvin Klein at one point. That was like a big highlight. I shot for Schlesinger, where they brought in a live panther, and I got to shoot her for a day. So that was my, you know, I had a makeup artist and models and, you know, the whole shebang. And my inner life was about developing soul travel, developing my ability to travel into these other worlds. And I think a lot of us are like this. We're kind of walking in two worlds. We have our straight Clark Kent identity, but then we have this part of us that is like this yearning of our heart or our soul or spirit that doesn't want to leave us alone. And you know, that's how it was for me. But I began to develop this, you know, ability to control my gifts more. And then I had this whole shift happen when I was about 27. I dreamed that I had gone back to school for my master's degree. And it was one of those really super lucid dreams. And I woke up in the dormitory, and there was all this extraterrestrial writing on the walls. There were symbols. And I was trying, it was kind of like hieroglyphics, but different. And I looked at it, and I kept trying to remember it, but I fell back asleep. And when I woke up, of course, all the writing was gone. But I remembered one symbol, which was a circle with a dot at the center. And somehow I knew that this meant the beginning of all things and the end of all things, although I had no idea how I knew that. So I went to the library to see if I could find some reference to it. And while I was there, the student assistant came and got me and said, there's a phone call for you at the front desk. And I was like, what? Nobody even knows I'm here. So I went to the front desk and picked it up, and this woman's voice said, is this Tricia McCannon? And I said, yeah. And she said, we've called to tell you that your dreams are real.
Oh, my gosh.
I was like, what? You know, who is this? And she said, we're from the priestesses of Isis. And that's all we're permitted to tell you at this time. And then she hung up. And then I woke up, and it was a dream within a dream.
Oh, how cool. Oh, how cool.
And I thought, who the heck are the priestesses of Isis? You know, is this like some strange Egyptian cult or something? And what are they doing calling me? And of course, just like everyone else, you know, I loved Egypt. I'd always been drawn to Egypt. I had lifetimes in Egypt, like, I mean, for heaven's sakes, that society went on for thousands of years. I'm sure a bunch of us did. But I always, you know, had this great love of the mysteries from Egypt. But I had no idea what this was. And so 2 months later, I was in, I went to eat at this little sushi restaurant, and there was a big line. So I went down to kill some time in this beautiful bookstore gift shop called Illumina, with, you know, soft plushy carpet and gorgeous Egyptian statues and beautiful jewelry and crystals. And I was looking at this Egyptian statue, and the woman behind the counter said, "Are you interested in Egyptian things?" And I said, "Yeah, I've been dreaming of the priestesses of Isis." And she said, "Oh, tell me your dreams." And I said, "Well, I'm not sure you're going to understand my dreams. I'm not even sure I understand them." And she said, "Try me. I'm a hierophant, or a high initiate, in the priestesses of Isis." And I, this was to become my shaman teacher. Okay. And her name was Shasta Zarin. And she lives here in Atlanta. She's quite hidden, but she's quite powerful. And this is how my Sophia book, my third book, Return of the Divine Sophia, that came out 2 years ago, begins. And the subtitle of that book is Healing the Earth Through the Lost Wisdom Teachings of Jesus, Isis, and Mary Magdalene. Because that book really is a discovery about a whole hidden chapter of world history I knew nothing about, where basically everyone could notice that who gave birth were the female of every species, and so therefore, logically, who would have birthed the universe? Oh, the Divine Mother. That makes sense. I mean, fathers don't usually give birth. And mm-hmm. so as long as that idea was held, there was a partnership model of men and women ruling in total peace for tens of thousands of years on this planet. I had no idea. And then it changed to where it was the Divine Father and Mother. And that's just fine, because, of course, there's a very beautiful aspect of the Divine Father that does exist as well. You know, the Divine Father and Mother are aspects of the one eternal one, the unknowable one, or the On, that as the Jewish Kabbalistic system would speak of it, or a tomb, as the Egyptians would speak of it. And so I, you know, as long as that was okay, then yes, it was still, you know, balanced. And then it became the Divine Father and Mother, daughter and son. In other words, there was an aspect of the daughter and the of the mother and father that would come to Earth as emanations that became the daughter and son. And they came periodically to Earth every, whatever, few thousand years to help uplift humanity. Well, that was pretty good. But then, about 3,000 to 4,000 years ago, this patriarchal wave came in, and they basically wiped out the Divine Mother, the Divine Daughter, and the Divine Son. And the Divine Father energy really took hold in a big way. And so we lost those other elements. And, you know, of course, what happened is we wound up with these patriarchal religions, like the patriarchal version that we have of Christianity, which really isn't what Jesus was teaching. He was teaching honoring the Divine Father and Mother, the kingdom of heaven is inside, you know, forgiveness is key, non-judgment, and so forth. And, of course, we know that the church went off down the trail of the Inquisition for hundreds and hundreds of years, you know, killing people, which, of course, is not what he was about. And then we have the patriarchal Muslims. And, again, there's some wonderful Muslims out there, but we have the crazy jihadists, and, you know, which are probably in their own way kind of like the crazy Inquisition people. And so, you know, the patriarch kind of went overboard because we lost the balance between the two. And so that book came out 2 years ago, and there are study groups all over America that study that book, as well as study groups that study the Jesus book, which when I spoke at your conference about 5 years ago, with you know, at the same time that my beloved friend Danian Brinkley spoke, I was speaking actually about the book about the lost years of Jesus.
Right.
And that book, you know, that book, again, as I said, I never intended to write that book. That book was a whole other kettle of fish. I was actually writing a book on the mysteries, and I had included three little chapters on Jesus, and then his section kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Because I actually, you know, despite the fact that I'm anything but a fundamentalist Christian, I happen to think Jesus is marvelous, and I really love him, and his teachings are kind of at the core of what I think all of us need to pay attention to make a better world. And so before I knew it, I had 200 pages in that book on him. And then I thought, oh my gosh, my book is having babies. You know, it's 600 pages. No publisher was going to want it to publish that. It's just too big. So I thought, well, I know what I'm going to do. I'm just going to take out that 200 pages on Jesus, and then it'll make the book shorter. And I was laying down in my office, and it was that time right after Christmas, which is such a great cave time. You know, it's dark and it's quiet, and everyone's tryptophaned out on the turkey.
Yeah.
and it broke. And the whirlwind of all the relatives has finally ended, and they're like, oh my gosh, I've run the race and I've survived. And so I was, my birthday's the day after Christmas, so it's always, I love that week because it's a time to really go within. So I was laying on the floor of my office with my hand over my eyes thinking, okay, I'm just going to take that 200 pages out. That is going to solve my problem. And I became aware of this brilliant light flooding down through my arm. And I moved my arm and sat up, and Jesus was standing in my office in this golden light body, you know, about 6'1", you know, the hair to the shoulders, wavy like we see him depicted. Mm-hmm. And without any preamble, he said telepathically, I want you to write a book about my lost years and secret teachings. There has been enough war and bloodshed in my name. And I tell you, Julia, it was like an arrow just pierced my heart. It was such a powerful experience. And I, you know, we're so mortal and vulnerable. And I remember I said to him, well, could I finish this other book first? I'm running out of money. We're so human, are we?
Aren't we?
he
sure. I'll get to that next, please. Yeah.
He smiled and he waved his hand. He said, "Don't worry, it'll just take a moment, and I'll open every door." And you know, it did take a moment. It was 3 years of a moment. To remortgage my house twice to pay my bills, but you know, it was in the mind of God, it probably wasn't even an instant, you know.
Well, like there's, you said, there's that time thing again.
That time thing is probably an illusion, but anyway, I wound up completely shifting gears, and it was each one of these books I have written, to be honest, is a deep initiation for me. I mean, as much as I am a student of the mysteries and a teacher of the mysteries, and I've had my own mystery school that I have students all around the world that I've taught. I have about 12 incredible online classes. I am still always in awe of the depth and breadth of the great masters and sages that have gone before us, and I'm very much a universalist where I honor the wisdom teachings in all great paths, including the esoteric teachings of even the patriarchal religions, which most of the public doesn't even really know exist. But I think it's important for us to come back and to balance by, you know, in this new age and the shift of the ages that we're going through, to bring the feminine element back into balance with the masculine to heal the planet. I think it's really a critical piece. And so this new book that's coming out, the one I've been deep in my edits this past couple of weeks for my publisher, Inner Traditions, this new book actually is about the landscapes of heaven, and it's about the course curriculum of the soul and what we're doing here, where we come from, who we truly are as divine sparks of God, how we fall into amnesia, how we forget who we are, and how we come down here and fall into these kind of dysfunctional patterns. You know, the PVR triangle, which is the persecutor, victim, rescuer that probably, gosh, 80-90% of the world is playing, how our little self or ego kind of tries to stay, keep its territory by using defense mechanisms or keeping itself in, you know, denial or self-righteousness, and how we can stop playing these games and kind of wake up to create the life that we really want to create, to find our higher purpose, which is a very big deal for a lot of people today, and to claim the life that we really want. And that book, of course, has a whole section on people who have died and gone to the other side. And so that section is called The Landscapes of Heaven. And that actually was originally the name of the book. But my publisher has renamed it. And actually, I can see reading through on these edits that it's actually a great name. So it's called The Angelic Origins of the Soul. And the subtitle is Finding Your Divine Purpose. So discovering your divine purpose. So, you know, that's a big one for a lot of people, particularly at this time of great world change. And I think that one of the things I love so much about your mom was a purpose-driven individual. She was on the path for truth, no matter where it led her. Mm-hmm. And she was open, and she was she worked very hard to stay as an investigative presence. You know, she had to be a very high soul and advanced soul to take on the mission that she did. But she, even though she could have gone and experienced a whole lot of, you know, metaphysical things herself, she worked very hard to sort of keep that objective, scientific reporter point of view.
Right.
So, and that was, you know, that probably was not so easy considering she was surrounded by people who were having metaphysical experiences. Don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. And that was always, I mean, and they kept saying, I mean, especially when she got working with the ETs, they kept saying, you know, we can just come through you, you know, and just talk through you. And she's like, oh, no, that's okay. Just, I prefer staying objective and then just keep, you know, let's just keep doing it this way. Then I can stay objective and just keep reporting it, you know, and I like doing it this way.
You know? Well, I mean, one could argue that someone might do it because they're a scaredy cat. But I don't think your mother was any kind of a scaredy cat. She was the opposite.
Yeah.
Boldly went where others might, you know, I mean, she was a pioneer, really.
Absolutely.
And I really admired and appreciated that and her work. And I'm so thrilled, Julia, you have continued. You and your family and your sister and your whole staff there to do this wonderful work that you all created together with this transformation conference every year. What is this, number 10? Is that right?
This is 12.
Oh, my gosh. And then the radio show. And now I think you've taken over the Eureka, the management of the Eureka Springs UFO conference?
Yeah, the UFO conference. Uh-huh. Yeah, we took that on, too. Mm-hmm.
And as you know, I actually have spoken at UFO conferences and about UFOs and this hidden chapter, gigantic hidden chapter, of the planet for a really, really long time. And I think this has been one of the challenges, you know, for me in some groups. When I first started speaking on UFOs, it was all boys.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, they wanted the metallurgical samples. Boy, they, you know, like, give me the schematics of the engine.
we want the nuts and bolts and the miles per hour and all that stuff. But things are changing.
They are changing.
Yes, they are. It is so wonderful and beautiful to see the change.
Well, you know, years ago, I think the first MUFON conference I went to was probably like 1987 or something. And again, I think having a grounded scientific approach, just like I have a very grounded archaeology, anthropology, science, and history approach in the way that I document the information that I address in my books. I think that that's a really great thing.
Oh, absolutely.
But it's only one part of the equation.
Mm-hmm.
And I discovered in those early years that the girls were really intuitive and tuned in, and they had no problem connecting with angels and spirit guides and all that, but they were a little freaked out by the gray aliens. And then you had the men who were like, you know, what do they want? Are they here to take over the world? You know, the torpedoes, you know.
Exactly, exactly. Let's go kill them.
Don't talk to me about angels. Nuh-uh.
So, right.
Right. And so more and more you have seen, you know, people within the UFO community and some of my colleagues, not all of them, but some of them making their way more towards the center where they're beginning to have the conversation, at least some of them, about the fact that this is a multidimensional universe.
Yes.
It's a multidimensional experience, mm-hmm. and that you can't truly comprehend the whole ET thing unless you get on this bigger page.
Yes, that, in fact, that's what was happening at this last UFO conference, one that we just had. Almost every speaker was saying that, and I'm just like, what is going on? People that have never talked about these things were all saying that, and it's like, what has happened? Have we gone into another dimension? What is happening?
Well, you know, last year I was at Contact in the Desert, which mm-hmm. is, you know, in Palm Springs every year, and I spoke, of course, like all the other keynote speakers there. And we had a panel, and mm-hmm. We had actually some great people on that panel, J.J. Hertak and Desiree Hertak, who are, you know, mm-hmm. again, a great combination between
Absolutely.
Grounded and the scientific and the metaphysical and the esoteric. We had Whitley Strieber, who actually, I think, he was getting over the death of his wife from
right.
cancer, and he's really, you know, he went from those successful books, Communion, that were very brilliant but fear-based. He's come a long way towards, you know, his own, I think, deep and profound spirituality, and he got to speak. We had James Gilliland, a really lovely man, as you probably know, from California, who is on property where the ETs are showing up. Well, I mean, the lights are showing up in the sky all the time. The ETs aren't materializing and walking into your front parlor and sitting down or anything. It's just unusual.
It might be if you're one that can see them.
Now, that could be true. We also had Linda Howe, who, you know, is probably been the foremost female investigator in the UFO field, who, you know, in order to prove that she had the chops for all those boys, you remember the beginning when she was going into the cattle mutilation, she had, you know, these big cranes lifting up these dead cows. It's like, okay, she's got the moxie. And so what happened was Alan Steinfeld, who's a very dear friend of mine from New York, who's himself, I think, a pretty brilliant, wise guy, was the moderator. And he tried to really open it up to this spiritual consciousness. And, you know, I actually responded to all of that. And what happened was then all these other speakers, who I think are wonderful in their own right, began to really share some of the deeper levels of their own perception. And it was great. It was, people said it was the best panel that we had, and it's because that whole multidimensional piece got added to it.
Mm-hmm.
And so wonderful. Your conference, the Transformation Conference, we're going to be having all of that, from UFOs to multidimensions to the change of ages. I mean, it's going to be a great conference.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it always is. and yeah. It's always got that mixture, and, you know, and then now our UFO conference is starting to shift. So it's like, okay, this is interesting. What's going to happen here?
I think that it's like the male and the female sides of the brain. Mm-hmm. You know, the male side is the one that wants the metallurgical samples and schematics, and the female is the one that's able to kind of open up intuitively and communicate with the other realms. And the more we come into balance in our own thinking and our own approaches to life, the more we're able to ground ourselves so that we're not, you know, just delusional, but also open up to this spiritual dimension that is part of life and is what actually informs the physical world that we participate in every day.
Right. Absolutely. Well, you know, last year we tried to put the two conferences together. We kind of put them back to back. And it just didn't quite work, you know. Yeah. It's like, and it may have been because we were trying to make it happen. I don't know. And so this year we pulled them back apart. We said, okay, you know, we're just going to put them where they, you know, where they've always been. And then they go and shift. It's like,
you
okay.
One, that you have such great people, great speakers. And again, one of the things I love about Ozark Mountain Press is that while you have some really well-known names, like my dear friends, Stuart Wilson and Joanna Prentice, who I think are amazing from England, who, like your mother, have really brought forward research on the Essenes and Mary Magdalene and on Atlantis and, you know, just, you know, deep things that are grounded in investigative research as a hypnotherapist with people that they were not putting the words in their mouth, like your mom, same kind of thing. But you also have people who are not as well known, but who have something significant and important to say. And I love that you give a voice to that. And, you know, one of the books that you have that I always feel like I have to apologize for it, but it was such a great book. But it was Jehovah and E.T. was the name of it. And, you know, that sounds like such a crazy title, was Jehovah and E.T., but the truth was it was a biblical scholar who wrote it. He really knew his stuff, and he took a very serious examination of that question. And so you guys have put out some brilliant books.
Well, that's what my mom used to say, is we don't print, what'd she say? We don't print no junk.
No, and I'm looking forward to meeting all your other speakers that are going to be there. I looked at your website. It's www transformation conference. Is that right?
Yeah, transformation-conference.com. Uh-huh.
Right. Yep. And for those of our listeners who would like to, you guys can also check out my website, which is www.trishamcannon.com or trishamcannonspeaks.com. And that's the T-R-I-C-I-A spelling of Tricia. And the McCannon is kind of like Dolores Cannon and Julia Cannon.
Cannon with a mitt on the front.
Yeah, M-C-C-A-N-N-O-N. So TrishaMcCannonSpeaks.com. And if you go there, there's actually a bunch of free stuff from a lot of videos on YouTube and some radio stuff and audios. But you'll also be able to see not only books, but I've developed over the past few years, because I can't be everywhere, I've developed about 30 really amazing DVDs on all sorts of information about the UFOs, the ETs, the angels, the giants, the Anunnaki, and I have this incredible mystery school with 12 online classes. Probably the shortest is about 100 pages, and the longest is about 180, but most of them average around 150. And those are things that people can order, and then I send to them individually, and they can just download it just like a book. It opens up just like a gorgeous book with a cover and table of contents and about 100 gorgeous illustrations and all sorts of processes and exercises, plus a lot of information. And just this past year, I've just started doing webinars. And there's a guy out in California named portaltoascension.org. Mm-hmm. And I've done some really cool ones on angels and fairies and on ETs and also on Mary Magdalene and so forth. And I understand that this is actually something that you're thinking of getting going yourself, is something along those lines.
Right. We've got the university. That mom, you know, she had this vision right before. It was actually in 2013, I think, is when she got the vision and we announced it right in that time, 2013, 2014. We actually created the 501c3. We started it anyway, and it officially got incorporated just like last year. And so I'm still in the works of doing that. And what I've been guided now is to create it, to start online. And so I'm working on that. Yes.
Well, I think it's a great time for it, Julia. And I think that what's happening, in my opinion, and of course I'm going to be talking about this, and it plays into some of the research of your mom, mm-hmm. is that I think that we are not only at the end of that, you know, 1,000-year cycle and a 2,000-year cycle and a 2,160-year cycle, but we're also at the end of a 26,000 or 25,920-year cycle, where we are beginning to pass through the galactic equator. And they say that passing takes about 1,000 years. So we really just kind of got to the tip of it when the Renaissance began about 500 years ago. And so we're kind of smack dab in the middle of it, but we easily have another 500 years to go. Okay. And when we start talking about how these cycles of time affect consciousness on our planet, they in fact do. And the ancients, you know, who probably received their information from the Anunnaki gods who were so long-lived that they had eons to study these cycles, where, you know, our lives are, you know, 100 years or something, but if this knowledge is passed down to you from a being that lives 500,000 years, then they know from personal experience how these cycles can change consciousness. So, you know, as we move into the age of Aquarius, which according to the Theosophists began in 1939, where we move for the very first time into 0 degrees of Aquarius, and that, you know, each one of those degrees, there are 30 degrees in each sign, in each age. Mm-hmm. Each one of those degrees takes 72 years. So we would have come up to 72 years at when we hit 2012.
Okay.
So 2012 should have been year one of 1 degree into Aquarius. So if you add 72 years to that, then we'd move into 2 degrees and so forth. But you can just look back and between 1939 and, you know, now or 2012, you can see how we literally leaped forward mm-hmm. in every way that was Aquarian, which Aquarius, of course, is air, air travel, airplanes, communication, telephones, telegraph, cell phones, computers, fax machines, internet, laser, fiber cables, I mean, spaceships, you know, space travel. I mean, this is just the beginning. Mm-hmm. But what are the great wisdom teachings, mysteries tell us is that Aquarius is not only air, it is also ether. And ether is higher spiritual development. It's of all the five elements, it's the highest of the five. So suddenly we have stargates opening, we have ETs coming in, we have communication with the secret government that's in touch with the ETs and the secret space program that most people don't know very much about. We also have amending of the timeline where Atlantis fell about 12,000 years ago, about halfway through this cycle. And, of course, it's been publicly denied for, gosh, you know, centuries and centuries, even though the ancients knew it existed. We are suddenly beginning to see the rise of the evidence for these ancient civilizations and Lemuria and Atlantis, which tells us that this is not the first merry-go-round we've been on. This, right. You know, the history we've been taught is that we kind of like swung out of the trees like monkeys and were primitive cavemen trying to light fire, and then poof, Egyptian and Sumerian civilization just arose out of nothing. And,
right.
You know, there's no explanation. So when we talk about the shift of the ages, you know, it gets into this new Earth and some of the research that your mom was doing about mm-hmm. the waves of the indigos coming in and how these waves are star seeds that have come down here to change the world and to bring, to change this paradigm so that we're not, you know, continuing to repeat the same old stupidities.
Yeah.
And, you know, Donald Trump's a perfect example of someone who's kind of playing out a lot of the old paradigm, you know, the paradigm of selfishness and of narcissism and racism and prejudice and so forth. And so he's truly giving us a rallying point to say, do we want to continue down this path of exploiting the earth for coal and oil and polluting the environment and the rivers and the oceans and destroying the Environmental Protection Agency, or are we going to change it? And so, you know, it's given us an opportunity, I think, as a continent, as a country, and maybe as a world, to say, are we tired of this yet? You know, are we willing to do what it takes to replace it with something a lot healthier and a lot more balanced? Mm-hmm. And that's my hope.
Right, exactly. And when we stand up and speak as a people and just...
When we stand up and speak as a people. So, you know, when we talk about the shift of the ages, it has all sorts of implications, from, you know, the great cosmic clockwork to the ETs that are returning to interact with us, to an opportunity for enormous advancements in science and learning and education, but also this opening into the spiritual or the metaphysical realms that we've been talking about, where, you know, we're not leaving behind grounded science. I think that's an important piece, but we're allowing science and spirituality and metaphysics to get married again, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, okay, if you think about it, they were married for a long time. That's what the great mysteries were about, was all of those things we teach in a university plus spirituality and metaphysics. But they had to get a divorce about 500 years ago when, you know, science had been so suppressed for so long, or it didn't even really exist for the most part, except in a few places in the world. And so the Inquisition was so brutal and so strong and so scary, you know, people just kept their heads down. And if you didn't, you got killed. So when science came up with Galileo and all of those guys were walking on thin ice, and some of them really bit the dust, like, you know, how Giorgio Bruno. I mean, he was a priest, and his heresy was, he said, life existed on other planets and that the Earth went around the sun. And for that, they imprisoned him and killed him.
Yeah.
And so, you know, science had to divorce itself from spirituality to become accepted. It had to say, we don't really have anything to do with the soul. That's your province, you know, church. You know, you're the boss. And we're just over here observing things. And so now, with quantum physics and some of the discoveries where we realize consciousness affects matter, we're starting to get the marriage back together.
Yeah, exactly. I have a question. I may have missed something in here, but how, and I wanted to ask you before when we were talking on the phone, is, I may have said it, I don't know, but it's like, how do you know all this? Where did all this information come from? Did it come from like when you had Jesus appear before you and just, you know, just downloaded it to you? Or, I mean, how do you know all this?
Well, I'm a really old soul, Julia. I'm really old. I mean, I'm billions and billions of years old. I'm either brilliant or I was highly stubborn and remedial.
So is it just a lot of it's just coming back to you? Memories?
I'm a high initiate from the ancient times.
Okay.
And I work with the Galactic Councils. I'm actually sit on the Galactic Council in the Sirian system.
Okay.
And so, of course, that's not here in the physical world. In the physical world, I'm just like everyone else. I chop wood and carry water.
Now, are you doing that through visions? Or are you doing that through, how are you seeing that? That like you said, like when you were at 19, that's when you saw yourself doing that, right?
Yeah, so let me just go back a little bit, because I didn't kind of give you any further base. Basically, from the time I was a little girl, I had the sight. I was clairvoyant, and I was clairaudient, and I grew up across from a great forest. And in this forest, I would go and spend a lot of time, and I began to see the elementals in the forest, which are kind of like the guardian spirits for the plant kingdom. And most humans don't see them, so I think they were, you know, quite surprised that I could see them. Mm-hmm. So they, the overlighting angel of that forest, to come and talk to me. And so I was 8 years old. I met my first angel in this life, and he told me about the great chain of being, which is how the light and the sound are stepped down from the highest worlds to come into this world. And that made perfect sense to me. I mean, hey, yeah, that makes sense. And I could tell a lot of things about him. For example, I knew that this angel had never incarnated as a human. I could tell he was far more connected than we are, like he had direct knowledge and direct knowing. Actually have come outside to water my garden, and the train is going to pass by, so it's going to make noise here. Hold on a second. Goodness gracious. I have a train in my backyard. Not exactly, but sort of.
That's interesting.
I'll go inside. So when this occurred, it's quite a train, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
One time I had a New Year's Eve party out here with about 50 people, and we were all kind of doing a prayer and a chant for the new year. And suddenly the train came by, and everyone thought that was our chant. They thought, oh my gosh, we've raised the energy. I told them it was a dragon that lives behind my house.
There you go.
So I found myself having conversations with this angel, and then, like a lot of people in the world, I had a kind of a dysfunctional family. My dad was a very brilliant lawyer, but he had had a lot of tragedies in his life. He had been a military pilot, and his whole left side had become paralyzed from a stroke, and so he fell into alcoholism, and it created a lot of tragedy in our small family. So the way I coped with it was I would go for walks at night and rant and rave to God about the unfairness of life. And I found that there was this being that began to walk at my side. And he was, he would speak to me, and he would counsel compassion and forgiveness. And he would ask me questions about, you know, don't you think your father's in pain? Why do you think your father's in pain? You know, he would bring me back again and again to forgiveness. Mm-hmm. And this being later was to appear to me where I could see him. And he had an eagle's head and a human body. And he called himself Rigel. And he was the most powerful, benevolent being. And other people, including Socrates, and Jung, have had this being appear to them. And he looked the same. He, I believe, is an aspect of the Divine Father energy. And I also had an aspect of the Divine Mother energy appear to me, who calls herself Ariel. And she's the creatress from which all the other aspects of the divine feminine are born. She's like unconditional love. And these became my teachers on the inner levels. And so my greatest teachers have really been not in the physical world. I've always been a mystic. And for example, I think I told you that this last week my kitty has been my favorite kitty. I have three kitties, but she's 18. Sabrina just passed yesterday, and it's been a long, slow, painful week of her passing. And, of course, the last thing you want to see is someone that you love suffering. So probably about Thursday I started praying for there's a master called Master Prajapati who oversees the animal kingdom, and I started praying for him to come and take her spirit because she was just suffering. It was so hard. Well, probably on Friday night, I had a vision when I was in the middle of this deep prayer. And it wasn't of Master Prajapati. It was of a lion-headed female being, radiant with light, who was coming. And she was on a chariot with, I didn't look, but I think there were like four big cats pulling the chariot. And it wasn't until the next day that it occurred to me that this was Sekhmet. And I've only, you know, I know about Sekhmet. I mean, I teach the Egyptian mysteries, and I have had some of my students have encounters with her. And I myself have been to the Turin Museum in, you know, Italy many times, and they have more Sekhmet statues there than any other place in the world, and they're still activated statues. If they're not broken, the energy that was encoded in them, they're still like transmission stations. And so if you go into a real deep meditative state, and especially if you start chanting, you can awake the statue up enough to communicate with you.
Uh-huh.
Now, if the statue's circuitry is broken, you can't. You know, it's hard to do that. So I had only encountered Sekhmet one other time. Sekhmet's not one of my guides. You know, I have specific guides. Like, I work a lot with Horus. And I work a lot with Christ, and I work a lot with the Divine Feminine, the Divine Mother, Mary, and Mary Magdalene, but I work with Isis as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I see that all of these are like a cosmic play. These beings are eternal beings. From time to time, they come to Earth, and they come in one culture as, let's say, Isis and Horus or Isis and Osiris. The next time they come in as Jesus and Mary. You know, so it's like a great cosmic drama. And when we understand that, we can understand that the soul, which is an eternal being, especially when you get to that level of mastery, doesn't have to return. But these great beings choose to return because of their love for humanity. And so it's all connected. And when you start really looking at the ETs, of course we have third dimensional ETs that are driving physical ships and crashing. And we also have fourth dimensional ETs. And we have fifth dimensional ETs. Well, when you start getting up into the fifth dimension, you're talking about beings that can teleport at will, who can change their appearance at will, that use telepathy as, you know, normal business. And so this is why, to understand that phenomena, you know, you can only look at the 3D stuff so long before you start discovering things that don't make sense, like ships literally going in and out of mountains that are sheer walls, you know, right. Or four ships that come together and create one big ship, and then they go off as one big ship, and then later they split into four or five different pieces. That
yeah.
is not like any kind of physics we know. We don't know what that physics is.
It's not going to work in our physics at all. Well, Don just told me that he just called time on us. So,
oh, my gosh.
I know. It went by so fast. See, there's that time thing again. So.
That is right. And, you know, I'm going to be talking at this transformation conference about the shift of the ages. So we are going to be talking about time
and
how it affects us.
So
I certainly hope our listeners get a chance to come to the conference in Eureka Springs. And the dates again are, is it the 9th, 10th, and 11th?
9th, 10th, and 11th. And you'll be speaking on the 9th. And but come and enjoy. And, oh, everybody. And I think I want to have you on the show again, too, sometime, Tricia, because you have so much to talk about. But everybody, come and see Tricia and get her books and see more about her and come and you know, check her out on her website. And anyway, we love you. And
thank you so much. It was a pleasure, Julia. Thank you so much for having me. And I look forward to seeing you when I come back from Los Angeles.
Yes, absolutely. I love you. And we love you all. And we'll see you next week and see you at the conference. But good night, everyone.
Good night.